हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Bhagavat Sandarbha Adhyayana 3, Adhikarna 3, Transcendental Attributes of Bhagavan. Page 68. For a person who cannot show compassion, a false show of compassion causes him suffering. For a person capable of compassion, showing compassion makes him happy. Right? Because we're discussing this principle of Krishna being happy. What is his natural position? Right? Because so, it's something we're trying to obtain. We're trying to become happy. But Krishna, by his sarup, he is happy. You know, he is happiness. Right? Gajendra spoke thus to the Lord. Vriti, the next anucheda establishes that the Lord's form is a manifestation of bliss arising from his sarup shakti. The author delineates how the senses of the Lord are the source and shelter of the shaktis, of even the primordial demigods who control the senses of the jivas. And hence the author proves the Lord doesn't depend on Maya Shakti for manifestation of his form, but he does it through his own Shakti, right? Because you're trying to establish Krishna's position. And having established it, you want to show is that he's independent in that. Right? Because otherwise there's the idea that does the Absolute have a form? Is the Absolute a person? So that's being established. But one has to establish that being a person, having that form, is independent of anything else. So in other words, all other forms come from him, all other energies, all other activities, all other experiences come from him. And that's coming from his form. Because he and his form are non-different. Like for us, we'll say, oh, it's not coming from the form. It's coming from the subtle body, and that's coming from the consciousness of the soul, because we're different from the body, but Krishna is his body. It is him. So the body is the source of all that, because that's him. You understand? So he's in a different category than us. Slightly. Yes.
Also, this proves that people have this conception, okay, in spiritual world, Krishna has all, but when it comes to material world, he also has to follow the material.
Okay,
world.
Yes. For those who are following that, then he follows the laws and everything. But the point is he's the one, is the cause of these laws. So, the demigods are controlling the senses. But the point is that Krishna, he is the source, his body is the source of the demigods who are controlling the senses. Right? So he's not in any way dependent upon them. Is that... Yeah. Okay, Anucheda 50. Verses describing the Lord as not having hands or feet are in reference to the Lord with an infinite form of self-manifesting bliss. Though you have no material senses, you are the self-effulgent sustainer of everyone's sensory powers. The devatas of material nature herself offer you tribute, while also enjoying the tribute offered them by their worshippers. Just as subordinate rulers of various districts in a kingdom offer tribute to their lord, the ultimate proprietor of the land, while also enjoying the tribute paid them by their own subjects. In this way, the universal creators faithfully execute their assigned services out of fear of you. So the demigods, they're, yes, you're worshipping them, you're getting the benefits because you're working within their scene. But they're working under the power and protection of the Supreme Lord, right? So, therefore, his senses are separate. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. So, this principle that we understand he is beyond, right? Because why would we use this? Because we'll say, hey, of course, you know, why we're even discussing this? right? Because these are all discussed by the acharyas, because some people know they're discussing these points, some people don't know they're discussing these points. Right? Those who follow the Veda and all that, that they're following these points because they've heard from authority. Right? You have the Veda, so Shabda, they accept Shabda. So based on Shabda, therefore, then they apply that in their life, right? So they're Shabda through Anuman, then they make it apply in their life. So they see it, Pratyaksha, right? Because I've heard the philosophy, I'm seeing something, how do they connect? That's the Anuman, right? That's where then I use the logic, right? And then when I can actually see that connection, then that's that you would call that realization, right? So we can say is therefore religiously, then you could say that those who follow the Vedas are following the descending method, and that's why they're superior to those who don't follow the Vedas. Right? Because they're coming to the understanding of nature is through pratyaksha, through sensory perception. Right? The modern society, you could say, defines itself based on science. Right? People are religious, but that's their own personal thing. The modern society is based on science. Right? That's why it is what it is. Right? So science simply means observing what's the nature of something. And the nature of something, that's religion. So because they've gone about this, coming to the understanding of religion through an ascending process, they feel that they're different than those who just accept the scriptures and then practice them. Right? Even though they're using the same thing. Right? I see something through Anuman, I come up with a conclusion. They start with a conclusion through Anuman, then they can see it practically. Right? So this reversal of the processes of the ascending and descending, then that makes it that one's a sentimentalist and one's a true scientist. Though they're both sentimentalists and they're both scientists. Because you're not going to get rid of both. You can say, oh no, as academics we're just objective. So then objectivity, then right here we see all the statistics point to this, which is in opposition to your presently accepted theories. So then, if we're scientists, we'll accept it. They won't. Why not? Because it's subjectivity. Oh, I can't do that, because of this and that, and if I bring that up then at the conference, then I won't get the proper position, I won't get the chair, I won't get my grants, it's totally subjective. You could even say, go as far as to say, absolutely subjective. Right? So, but we understand what we're dealing with here is just, we're dealing within the material concept, within religion. So everyone's following religion, it's just how they go about it. There's no question that conditioned soul can function without religion. Because religion means the nature of something. If you don't follow the nature, how do you get a result? Right? If I don't follow the nature of a toaster, will I get toast? No. Right? I get the toaster, I stick a banana inside, am I going to get toast? No. You might get toasted from your mom, but you're not going to get toast out of the toaster. Huh?
Toasted banana.
Toasted banana, at best. you understand? You have to follow things. If I don't plug it in, what if I put the bread in but don't push the little slidey thing down? I want it lightly toasted, but I have it on full blast. Or the opposite. Or I don't leave it in the full time. I pop it up before the timer's done. You understand? So you're going to get different results. So unless you follow the nature of what you're dealing with, you do not get the proper results. That's religion. You follow the laws of God, that's called piety. You don't follow the laws of God, that's called impiety. Right? So that's the natural form. That's the descending process. The ascending is, we observe, we come up with what works and doesn't work, and then we establish the morality based on that. So we say, this is religion. This is what you have to do. Does that make sense? It has nothing to do with what's coming down from authority. Unless we're the authority, then that's okay. Then yes, the children have to follow what you do because you're the authority. Well, why don't you follow your authorities? No, we're independent thinkers, this and that. So what about the teenager? Why can't they be an independent thinker? No, I'm the authority. You understand? We're dealing with some really weird stuff here. Why? Because you're in the material world. Material world means weird. Right? That's just the definition. Right? Yes. Wasn't there a show, The Weird... A Weird World... Weird World or something? Yeah? Yeah. So, yeah. See, they're synonymous. Yes.
It's an interesting phenomena because seeing and hearing both material. However,
yes.
Srila Prabhupada mentions that you can see God,
yes.
but you can realize God by hearing
yes.
His glories.
Yes, yes.
So this is, and nowadays, if even in Krishna consciousness to devotees, it's very difficult to present Krishna consciousness as it is through the process of giving in Bhagavatam when everybody sits and hears.
Yes.
You have to entertain, you have to show them, you know, divide them in groups and discussion and all kind of things. So it's highly visual. But
yes.
our tradition, actually, it's through hearing Shabda.
Yeah. So that's the whole point, is that since Shabda is the higher and seeing is the lower, it's dependent on Shabda. That means you're dealing with a process that's using a lower level of mechanics and consciousness. You know, that's the point. It's because what are you doing? It's not that you've heard from Shastra. They are hearing. But who are they hearing from? Others. So it's paroksha. Right? Pratyaksha, okay, they see. But the point is you've heard it from others. And they have to show you at the same time. Right? And then you have to practically apply. So why does that even work at all? Because it's in line with the Vedic. Right? The Vedic is, as you hear, you see, you write, you do like that, those things. So you're hearing, you're seeing it, and you're doing something. That's what then makes it go. But based on hearing, then you can get everything. Right? But they're taking it that practice is not just the writing, it's not just just that you're seeing the person speaking, you actually have to see a little drama or something. You know, you have to act it out and, you know, do all that kind of stuff. You know, people just there, they don't have much, you know, they want to be entertained, as, you know, how you say, what was it, the gladiator pointed out, you know, right? You know, that's just the point, they just want to be entertained. So, that's the difficulty comes up, is that it's based on this. So it's using the ascending process, because basically speaking, now unless someone came from a background where basically, let's say you're talking about a Westerner, unless they came from a background that basically accepted one of the Abrahamic scriptures, you know, if they were one of those weirdo families, there, you know, then the Buddhists, you know, like that. But that's basically all it's going to be. You know, then there's no concept of shabdas first, and then you through logic, then you can see. They just don't have that samskar. It's just lacking, missing. Does that make sense? So that's the difficulty. So when it comes to applying religion, they don't know how to apply the higher levels of religion as a practice. Because Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha, they're all religion. So they only know Artha and Kama. Because Dharma means doing what you're supposed to do. Right? Previous to the baby boomers, you see that they kind of have a concept of duty. You know, those who grew up in the 50s, 40s, and all that, it was a sense of duty. You went to work because of duty and all that. You understand? You know, you did things, the family, you know, the commitments, the community. You did everything, you know, the status quo because of the sense of duty. But after that, it wasn't. It was more about what was good for you, how I'm going to enjoy. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that becomes a great difficulty. So we see in here is that what we were getting to before is, you know, that was... Point is that you see is that within the material concept, why there's such a problem is that the pro-Vedic, they're following the descending method of religion. And the non-pro-Vedic, they're following the ascending method. Right? So, and then even within that ascending method, you'll have those who have some tradition in the ascending, and those who don't accept that at all. So in other words, those within the ascending who accept authority and those within the ascending who don't. So they're the lowest. Right? But both of these, then there's going to be a problem when you get to the spiritual. Right? So in the spiritual, then the problem will come up is that now how do you get from that position of Shabda to Krishna? Right? So now the followers of the Vedas who are not devotees, they're going to use the ascending process. Because they have the Veda, they understand the all-pervading, the eternal nature, and they're going to start from Brahman and then progress forward. And so because they'll take Brahman as the reality, they're going to take Paramatma and Bhagavan, or the forms of the Lord, to be material, dependent upon the material nature, just like us. Right? Because that nothingness is the supreme. So that's where the ascending comes in. Therefore, they're mental speculators. That's why sometimes you see is that followers of the Vedas aren't called mental speculators, and sometimes they are. Sometimes the jnanis are seen in the same light as the devotees, and sometimes they're not. It just depends upon, and religiously, we're the same. As the Hindus, as the jnanis, we're the same. That we're starting with Shastra and bringing that into our life. But when it comes to the philosophy, that's when then we don't have that commonality. Because they won't take it and apply the same principle to certain aspects of the scriptures. Those that point out the personal, they won't accept that. So they'll use the ascending process. Right? And then those who only use the ascending, they don't have a descending process to use. Then the difficulty comes down is they will tend to apply ascending also to the philosophy. But if they accept authority, they'll go by what someone says as long as they haven't cheated them or let them down, or, you know, as if letting someone down is the worst thing in the world. You know, because they're the center of the universe. Oh, he didn't tell me the truth, so that's the worst thing in the world. Why? Because it's connected to you. What about you? Did you tell your kids about that medicine's not going to taste nice? Oh, I'm just being practical. You know what I'm saying? So it's very self-centered. But at least there's some idea, if they accept authority, that you could switch to the descending process. Because they're semi-using it in that they've heard from authority, but at the same time, so it's Shabda, but it's not based on scripture. It's based on Pratyaksha, so its ultimate base is there, but it's more pious than someone who doesn't accept authority, and unless they see it, it doesn't happen. Because that's just straight up from Buddhism. Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing. Is that one is it's just atheism, you know. The other is then you have the idea of it can be something higher. So that's the whole point, is that we're using the descending and ascending. So we're using descending in philosophy and descending in religion. That's the true Vaishnava. That's the pure Vaishnava platform. So the problem comes up is that we're discussing here is that devotees will accept, you know, may accept or not the religion, and or may accept or not the philosophy on this descending process. You know, so some will accept the philosophy, but not the religion. Or the other, or any combination. So we see the problem comes in is that they're using these lower levels of consciousness and mistakenly thinking that they're on the same level as the higher. You know, so therefore, that you're seeing it, then yes, you want to get to seeing, but where does that come from? It comes from the authority of whatever is the latest self-help book that whoever is doing the seminar read. Or that he's following someone who has read it. Or he's following someone who heard about it from someone who's read it. Or they are following it because they read a little, some, you know, little report on the internet about how it's great. You know, so that's the problem, is it's not descending. Where does it come from? Why, if it only works because it's coming from the Vedic tradition. But why not use the Vedic tradition? It has the same flavor as pure Krishna consciousness. That's the advantage of the Aparavidya, is that the Vedic knowledge in its context, how it's given in the scriptures, it naturally blends very well with the philosophy. So it's the perfect religious platform to support pure philosophy. But if you don't use the aparavidya, you use avidya, the problem is it's opposed to pure philosophy. And then that's where it comes up. The devotees find that it's a duality between their temple life and their personal life. But since it's all Krishna's world and Krishna's laws, it's all his religion, there's nothing contradictory on any platform. Does that make sense? You know. And there we, and therefore we see in 11th canto, 9th canto, they point these things out. Seeming contradictions in our concept of mundane religion and in our ascending process are thrown out by these particular discussions. They show that the contradiction still works if it's applied in Krishna consciousness. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, yes, but the point is how many people, that here's the fun part. How many people before joining Krishna consciousness actually ever went to one of those kind of seminars that they run like these modern self-help things? How many actually went? Right? Probably very few, if hardly any. So then to say, oh, well, the Westerners, this works better for them, that's a lie. Because they have no samskar of it at all. So whether it was you did this one or you did a Vedic one, or even if you did a different self-help that's completely opposite of that. Because there'll be self-help things that will take this kind of approach that you've just said and just say that's bogus. Right? In other words, intellectuals who see themselves as professionals will go for it. Intellectuals who don't see themselves as professionals but as intellectuals will completely throw it out. They'll say it's artificial. Because it is. Your life doesn't go like that. You know, so it's another illusion on the illusion because it works nicely there, and then they just say, and like that you, what do you call it? Like that you interpret, right? That's straight Shankaracharya. Gives a bogus interpretation to something that doesn't apply and says, like this you interpret everything else in the sutras. So you understand? So this idea of Buddhism, unless you see it, it doesn't exist, and that you go on interpreting in a mundane way to everything that doesn't apply, these are pretty standard issue stuff. It's just straight up Buddhism and covered Buddhism. So that's why we have to hear the philosophy in the descending and apply the religion in the descending. Otherwise, we will make, you know, two major mistakes of karma and gyan, and within that we have, you know, a basic 26 different varieties of major combinations of that to end up with all the various mentalities. And then the details of that you end up with unlimited. But if we take the descending in parampara on both, the philosophy and religion, then there's only going to be one opinion. You know, the opinion of the spiritual world. So that way, every individual in the spiritual world sees as an individual this one absolute truth. Right? They may have their particular attraction to that one absolute truth and their particular service, but there's no difference of opinion in philosophy. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it's just a matter of not understanding. See, there's another interesting thing Prabhupada was explaining about in that small book on yoga. Is that he's explaining, remember we mentioned about the false ego, he presents that last. Because earth, water, fire, air, and ether, mind, intelligence, you can stay there straight up front material. But false ego, it's not material, it's not spiritual. Right? Because it's based on avidya. So now you can have your spiritual form situated in the spiritual realm and come under the influence of the avidya shakti, in which you only see the sambandha and abhideya not connected to Krishna. So the jnana and kriya shaktis, you don't see them connected to Krishna. You just see that I have knowledge, I apply it in activities, those activities give results, and I like those results. Rather than those results are for Krishna. Right? So you're already under the avidya shakti, so you're already on the mundane platform. So it's not from the material world. The false ego is not from the material world. It's from the avidya shakti. Right? But at the same time, it's when we come into the material world, then we're giving a very specific false ego that goes with our particular conditioning, the body, the gross and subtle body we're in. So that, you can say, is then part of the eight elements. But at the same time, it's why you have that is not part of that. That's part of the avidya. So that's why someone can get liberated and still maintain that position in avidya shakti, that I'm the controller and enjoyer. That's why liberated persons don't go back to Godhead. They stay in Brahman, and then they fall in the material world. Only devotees are actually liberated. Right? You know, Prabhupada gives the example. You have the plane, it goes up, and it goes very high. But you can't say, it can't stay there. It has to come down and land. It can't rest in space. You know, they say, okay, the people say they go to the moon, you know, and they're going very high, but at the same time as they have to come back. They can't just stay there. And at the same time as they say 240,000 miles, but, you know, space is unlimited, so it's not a very big amount. So, yeah. So the whole thing is that it's where you can rest. That's then the actual position. So you can, unless you can rest in the spiritual world, then you're not actually liberated. You're temporarily liberated. You know, it's like being on a trampoline. You know, there's that little moment where you're weightless. You know, and then you come back. You know? Just imagine. You can say, oh no, but this, that. But what happens if you bounce and you go up in the air and then just stop there? You'd get worried, right? Your family would get worried. Yes. You know, even if the teenage punk doesn't get worried, when he starts getting hungry and all the food's down there, then he gets worried. You know, so unless you can rest there, then you're not actually liberated. So unless you can rest in the spiritual platform, which is the spiritual world, you're not actually liberated. Does that make sense? That's why jnan still is material. Even though it will get you out of the material world, but it won't get you into the spiritual world. So the avidya shakti, it just means now you're in ignorance. Getting rid of the avidya, that brings you to the liberated, that's neutral, the Brahma Bhuta. But it's only Krishna consciousness that brings you to the positive. Right? Does that make sense? So there's these underlying principles that if you follow them, then it works very nicely. And if you don't, then by habit, you're just going to think you're doing the right thing. But actually, you're not. You can engage that nature, but only if it's that aspect of engaging it. You understand? Having it's not enough. It's only when it's engaged. So if there's false ego, how will it be engaged? Or its engagement will be less.
Maharaj, in the Vedic literature, how do we call the scientist? What is the name of the scientist?
You know? They're just mental speculators, basically.
Is it like a rishi, no?
Yes, but they'll be dealing on the metaphysical, so they'll be more into Shankya and stuff like that. See, the modern scientists, it's just what they can see grossly with their senses or calculate with mathematics. But subtler than that is the mind, you know, and the ego and all these things. But subtler than that's the metaphysical. And then subtler than that's the spiritual. So the devotee means all these levels you can see and function on that platform, you're a scientist. They're just the lowest level of scientists. But here in the material world, because they're, you know, one of the few people who think, they're considered the highest. Yeah. You know? And because they're working with the grosser nature, their identity or their ego is the grossest. A physicist, his ego will be grosser than, let's say, a psychologist. That's why then, therefore, they sit at the front during the graduate ceremony and the psychologist sits at the back. He's not as gross.
It's not It is not art, science.
Yes, yes. And if it's just arts, you're a PhD in ballet or something, then you're really in the back. Anyone has a PhD in ballet? Okay. You have. Okay, great.
Who's in the back?
Yeah, he's in the back. But he's farther in the back. So. He's got it in cooking. Yes.
The question is about methodology of teaching. So Gadish Prabhu mentioned about speaking and showing like ways of presentation. And if we usually explain in lectures some logical points of Vedic knowledge by using blackboard or a PowerPoint presentation for visuality.
Yeah, it means you can use, what he's mentioning is that, see, is there's a difference where you're presenting something and then you use these different, visual aids to make it a little bit better. In other words, on its own, the presentation will work. But by adding these things in, it just makes it a little bit better. You know, it's like they say, a picture is worth 1,000 words, you know, like that. But what he's talking about is you remove these visual aids and practices, you don't have anything. It's just there isn't a present, there isn't something. It's based totally on that. You know what I'm saying? So we don't have any problem with it. It's part of the Vedic thing. That's why in the explanation you give an example. Right? Because the example means, and what example? It has to be an example that someone can relate to. And if you can relate to them, that means it relates to a samskar that they have, an impression. That impression is then stored in the memory, which the mind accesses, right? And so then the mind, within the mind's eye, you're seeing that. So in other words, the Vedic then does the same thing, but just on a subtler platform. You address the nature of someone and give examples according to that. They see everything you're talking about. And if you need a working example, then you give the example as something practically applied. Some situation they're in, the experience they got, what they saw, you know, the mechanics of how it worked. You just see which aspect of the impression you're bringing out. You know, in other words, the knowledge, the mechanics of it, the result, the experience. Does that make sense? So if you do that, then your example works. So the Vedic does all that, but it's just done in a subtle way. While the modern, let's say you have the seminar. Let's just take for example. You have a seminar, right? You have a fixed seminar. You do the circuit. You know, you're going around doing all these things, right? You have your presentation. You have your thing. You know, you tell them, okay, how long does this take? Yeah, it'll take 1 hour and 20 minutes. You know, they can work it into their slot. It'll cost this much. We get only this many people, only 30 people, you know, like this and that, okay? Now, as you go from business to business, even though the businesses are totally different, the natures of the people are different, you're going to give the same seminar. You go from this part of the country to that part of the country, where in the region they think and deal different, it's the same seminar. You go from this area of the world, you know, to another area of the world, like another continent, you're still going to give the same lecture. And then you're going to go, yeah, here they didn't take it so well and all that, you know, they're not so together. These guys really went for it, they're really good. So then what's the problem? The problem's with the audience. Why? Because you're not addressing the individuals of the audience. And if during the lecture someone comes up and wants to ask a question, later like that, we'll address it. We don't address this now. So you're not dealing with the individual. So even though it's saying, oh, it's so developed, it's so modern and all this, it's not actually developed at all. It's very impersonal. And it's being thought, oh, no, we're being prepared. We're involving people. It's a workshop. You know, it's about the people. It's not about the people. It's about just, this is the way I can relate to giving information, controlling people to get the result I want. So they're not adjusting for the audience at all. Some better ones might. You know, especially at the end, they ask some questions, then they can deal with all that kind of thing. But their presentation generally will always be the same. You know, so if someone does do it differently in each place, that's unique. Like Prabhupada was going to, it was Japan, like that, and he was going to give some presentation. And so then he worked on that, what is it?
Light of the Bhagavad.
You know, using their examples, their kind of tradition, those kind of things like that. You know, so even the artwork was done in their tradition. But it was using the Vedic thing. So he's showing the Vedic applies there. So he was bringing it across to there. Didn't change the philosophy at all. Because I think, that was the description of autumn, I think. You know, it's one of those, one of the chapters in the 10th canto. And then he showed that because they like nature and all these things, so he chose that. And then, so same philosophy, just the example, you know, the context of the example was different. Does that make sense? So that's then where you're making unique for the audience. Does that make sense? Okay. Yes.
Another point Srila Prabhupada mentions, he says, first class intelligence, second class intelligence,
third
class. So it seems that very few are first class people. Because just by hearing them, you realize, you have to hear, see, something happens to others, and then you realize, the third class, you hear, you see, you experience it, you know, your own, and then still you don't come to the conclusion.
That's fourth. Third means you seeing it, you realize it. Fourth means you see it, you still don't realize it.
You experience, then
you experience and you don't realize it.
Yeah. So just by hearing it, it is difficult to present.
Well, it's just like, let us say, just take kind of like a lecture situation. The teacher is just speaking, right? And then there's that person at the very front of the class and the one sitting in the very back, you know, that they understand it. Then he's going to do some visuals and all that, and for that person that's not a problem. But then now other people will catch it.
Right?
Now you come to the third part, the scary part, where he gets people up there and they're going to go through something. Right? So now, the next group, the third class intelligence, now they'll catch it, and the ones with the first class intelligence are hoping to God that he doesn't call on them to come up. Right? Because that just freaks them out. They don't want to go through that stuff. It's just too embarrassing. It's like, you already understand it. To them, it's artificial. Is it? And then there's the guy sitting all the way in the back, you know, smoking and on their phones, that they don't catch anything, even all three of these go through. Does that make sense? So they're in other words, the first group was in the back, but that fourth group is in the back row. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, no?
I just mean that the Guruji explained that we have some principle always and some details.
Yes.
And if we draw in the blackboard just principles, for example, how soul more superior than intelligence and how descending and ascending.
No, it means, point is, using visual aids is not a problem. The point is that you have, it's just like this. If you can give your presentation without visual aids, then it's complete. Now, if you add visual aids to it, it just makes it better. But now, if you only have visual aids, then what? You know, it's just like, let's say I have the pasta, right? And on top of that, I put some basil leaves and some olive oil, okay? So, the pasta on its own is fine. You add the basil and olive oil, it becomes better. Now, what happens if there's no pasta and I just put some, break up very nicely on a nice plate, some basil leaves, and, you know, do a nice little swirl with the olive oil? It looks fabulous, but what is it? You know, they'll go, look at that, great, oh, look at the plate, oh, look at the quality of the oil, you know, see how, you know, the color of it's not clear, it's got that slight green to it, so it's really good, and, you know, the basil leaves, you know, very nice, full, they're big leaves, so, you know, young leaves and all that, and they still have that freshness to them, and, you know, so, I mean, what a wonderful presentation, isn't that fabulous, and, like, I've never seen a better, you know, But what's there? Nothing. You know? Does that make sense? That's what he's talking about. Yeah, so therefore anybody who's actually intellectual would go, who does that stuff? You know what I'm saying? But that kind of approach is actually one kind of religion. It's just the way they like to do it, and you know, it's the crocodile grin religion. You know, you do things together, and then we're all buddy buddy, and it's all happening, and then you know, and then someone's submissive. Oh yeah, that was so wonderful. The other one, yeah, fabulous. And you know, it's a whole ritual that you know, it many people. It means now it's not that you can't get benefit from it. So if you're not too negative and pessimistic and snarky, you'll get benefit from it. You'll have gotten from learning, from hearing, and from seeing, and from experiencing. So you've gotten all three. But at the same time, it's unnecessary. You know what I'm saying? Because the amount of time you spent, what you get through is very less. The same amount of time you could have gotten through more. You know? So you see, Srila Prabhupada started this whole movement and all that, and he didn't need to use that. At the same time, as then you have the visual, you know, in the senses of, with the kirtan, with the deity worship, with the festival, nicely decorated deities, the rathayatras, the prasad. So you do get it on all levels, but that's the thing in the Vedic, they're all mixed in the natural, in a culture. Because this other is that, now what's the culture after that? Now what do you do? With that person and all that, now what do you do? If you meet on the street, what do you do? You understand? They don't have a culture. They only have a culture to go to seminars and workshops. That's it. That's some people. Their life is going to a retreat, a workshop. That's all they have. They don't have friends as such. Unless it's friends. Hey, what do you think of the retreat? This, and that's all they talk. That's it. You know what I'm saying? The personal life, this, that, there's nothing there. So that's what we're talking about. He's pointing out that the modern society has become so shallow. And then they're thinking this is advancement and all that, when it's not. When those, you know, the yobs sitting at home that don't do all this stuff and that, and they have personal relationships and interactions and all that based on they sit together, they eat dinner together, they share whatever they did and all this and that. They may yell and scream at each other a bit, but they actually have a better position and a higher level of consciousness. Though not as sophisticated. It's not as intellectual, it's not as sophisticated, but it's actually a higher level of consciousness. Because when push comes to shove, is there anybody in that room that by that culture of that nature of that seminar in that room that you're going to, you know, risk your life for anyone there? No, because it has nothing to do with what's there. There's no identity with anyone there. You know what I'm saying? If you do that, that's from something else. That's from elsewhere. You know what I'm saying? So there's no identity there. There's an identity there, but it's not a personal identity with that has a personal effect in interacting with others. It's an impersonal identity as a group. But you're one who goes to workshops, not to that workshop. You know, there's a difference. Yes.
It seems that it is one of the difficulties of mixed devotional service. You can take from the Veda and from the modern.
Yes, yes.
So, I think there is only one way association of devotee to go out of this problem. But in the devotee, we need to select the devotee.
Yes, well, that's why it says. You associate with devotees. You associate with like-minded devotees. You associate with those who are more advanced than you.
Because
you're a person, yes. You associate with others who are like-minded. But like-minded more than you know, you're trying to go get as deep as possible. Rather than, there is something, because people who go to these kind of seminars, then other people have that same mentality. They go to the seminar. So that's the common point. But outside of that, then there's not much to talk about. right? A few individuals might find friends there in this and develop. But that's because of them, not because of the seminar.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Because the whole difficulty is that if this whole system is working so great, why isn't things coming together? Does that make sense? Things socially, you see, are becoming more and more separate, even though they're talking about world with no boundaries, with no borders, excuse me. Well, actually, they're talking about no boundaries, yeah. You know, I can do whatever I like. So that's the difficulty, is that the jiva maya covers the living entity. So they're following an impersonal approach, but by jiva maya they think they're being very personal. You know, they're not being actually very logical at all, but they're thinking that they're very intellectual. They're thinking they're very broad-minded, though they're becoming very xenophobic. You know, so all these contradictions are happening. That's jiva maya. It makes you, one thing that you're doing, it makes it seem like the opposite is all right. If you do it, if someone else does this exact same thing, they're wrong. But if you do it, you know, it's because you're a person, there's individual and all that. So you're an individual, no one else actually is, unless you accept them that way. So you're not starting with the premise that they're an individual. Right? You know, I mean, look at all the things that they talk about now, being nice to others, this, that. Right? It means in the Western tradition, Jesus didn't talk about that. But, you know, do unto others as you would have them do unto you, something that turn the other cheek, you know, all these, you know, things. You know, but they'll reject religion and then try to establish the same morality without religion, without it being personal. Because there, that you're a person, they're a person. But in the modern thing is, you're a person, and other people fit into the category of persons, but aren't necessarily a person themselves. Does that make sense? So, that's the difficulty. So it's a matter of, are we looking at it from the ascending or descending? Right? So if we're in the descending, if we use visual aids, it's fine. But if it's in the ascending, then do we really have something to say? What's the substance? Because then it'll have a lot of base in speculation. You know, and that there's plenty of that. Krishna consciousness is what's lacking. This idea is that, no, we need professionalism and, you know, be logical and up to date and all that. That's not what's lacking. There's tons of people who are professional and up to date. What's lacking is God consciousness. Therefore, someone who's actually God conscious can therefore explain to these people who are professional and up to date how to apply Krishna consciousness in their professional up to date position. But that you have to become one yourself, is that the point? You know, it's just like, let us say, the teacher, right? The teacher at the school, and they're, let's say, prepping the students for the exam. And in that preparation, the kids all get very high marks. But there's not a necessity that teacher has that same marks. Let's say they're all getting, you know, 98, 99, 100%, but the teacher only got 92 when they did it. But they can get them there, because they know by practical, like that. They know the connection. Or let's say in the Olympics, how many Olympic gold winners are the ones that are the trainers for these other generations? Right? Very few. Right? There's someone who, they just know the field, know how to get you to do it and all that, and can show you how to do it. And then you, by your ability, you can go further. So you don't have to know the practice, you don't have to be able to do the practice of the area that you're dealing with. You just have to understand the philosophy and how it applies within their area. Because that's what's missing to them. They're already professionals. They don't need us. Like, I remember one day we were discussing, this has been back in the, when would have that been that? Yeah, back in the 80s. A whole group of college students came. And they were, I guess they were, they may have been that, you know, bunch of the Calcutta, the youth there. who used to be, I don't know, whatever, but, you know, they go to school, but they're devotees and all. So they all came out, and they were sitting there and asking questions about applying Krishna consciousness in their life. And so I was, you know, he was trying to use examples within business, but I got a bit too too much getting into detail of that. And at one point they said, we understand business. We want to know how to be Krishna conscious in the business, so you don't have to explain to us the business part. Right? Because I was going too much into the example and not enough into the substance. And another time with a very, you know, classic business family person, we were also discussing something personal in his life and how to apply it within the business and the community and that. And I also did the same thing again. And he says, you don't have to explain to me business. I know business. I've come to you not for business. If I want to know more business, I go to a bigger businessman than me. I've come to you to understand how to be Krishna conscious in the business. You understand? So that's the thing, this idea we have to become professionals to work with professionals is absolutely wrong. Because if you want to approach that, then we have to be so much better of a professional than them that they're going to be impressed by our professionalism. And where are we going to find that? You know, what two or three people in the whole movement have that qualification? You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing. We're going to go by that mundane, like people from their mundane background. You know, their position in the society. I know one devotee is that his position in the Indian society of being a Brahmin and a particular group of Brahmins and within that being the topmost of that. It's the only person I've ever seen when they go in the natural, the Indian, oh, where are you from, this, that, and then they can figure out where you are, that they were impressed. I've seen one devotee like that. You know? That's on that social thing. You know, and then being that professional, it means who comes from the background where everything's in place? Okay, so he's got top marks and all this. Yeah, but he comes from a Namashudra background, so then the businessman won't really want to listen to him. He'll hire him, but he wouldn't take personal advice because his social status is so low. So unless he's from this really high-grade family and he is the top and the things like that and he's doing some practice, then you'll listen. Who does that? Right? So that's the whole thing. Being a devotee, you know, you got people in Bombay that go out and collect from crorepotties. They're from a family that probably lives off the street. Their background. And they came in contact with Krishna consciousness because they were saying, what's wrong here? So their solution wasn't get more money. It was like, you know, there's something wrong with this whole thing. So they became a devotee. You know what I'm saying? So as a devotee, they accept them. If you want to get into the background, no, it's not going to work. So that's the whole thing, is that it has to be appreciated that we know the philosophy, we know how to apply it practically into people's lives. And then according to the individual devotees, they can work with certain groups of people to show it in their life. And if professionals is one of them, then great. But it's not that you have to become a professional. There's principles of professional. You're there on time. You yield properly. You speak. You let the other person speak. These are just common etiquette. You know what I'm saying? That those would be common with someone else. You know? So it's not that it's exclusively to them. These are just human culture. So you know the philosophy, you practice the philosophy, you appreciate the philosophy, you have some culture, you can speak to anybody, literally. This idea is that, no, we have to present ourselves as professionals. No, we don't. You know, the big professional will deal with you properly because that's just how you're supposed to deal as that kind of level. That's that particular status. But it's not that he's going to think that you're behaving in that way is what's impressing him. No, he'll just glean the philosophy from it and leave everything else. And he'll appreciate the philosophy. But that's coming because he's a cultured person. Does that make sense? So therefore, if we have the appreciation of the philosophy and culture of Krishna consciousness, who can you not present things to? right? Because there's something for everybody. Even as the guy, you know, the guy that lives on the street or something, or you know, a hoodlum or something like that, they appreciate authority and respect of authority and dealing with others and the sense of duty. And that devotees have. You can talk to that guy in the street like that. So there's no one you can't talk to. You got the, you know, snarky, what do you call it, you know, pessimistic intellectual. But we use logic and all that. Why can't we talk to him also? And snarky, the material world is a bad place, so we don't have a problem. You know, and we can give snarky examples. So it's that, who can't we talk to? You know, it's like you have someone who's a political authority and all that. You know, the authority, that, the line like this, we have no problem with that. Right, because all the opulences, all the vibhutis come from Krishna. So we don't have a problem with any of them. So devotees can talk to all these people by being pure devotees. They try to be something else, unless you're materially better at it than the other person, you know, then why will they listen to you? Because if you're just equal with them, who listens to an equal? Right? Your friends have been telling you for years to do this. Do you ever listen? No. You know? So that's the whole thing, but the point is the descending method is superior to the ascending. It can always establish itself over the ascending. So therefore, by following that on both levels of philosophy and religion, then it will work on all platforms. Somebody said, of those who want to know, those who don't want to know, you can't, you know, nothing much you can do. Is that so? That's the whole point, is that we can function in modern situations, but we don't have to use their methods, because their methods come from the Veda. They're just, you know, slightly. You know what I'm saying? It's just like we have potatoes, okay? And then, you know, some guy sitting there out in, you know, St. Petersburg, he has vodka. It came from potatoes. It's just, you know, a strange application of potato-ness, but you know what I'm saying? In other words, they're not taking cabbages and making vodka. Right?
Not yet.
But we will do it. But they'll probably start with beetroot first. Yeah. Does that make sense? So the whole idea is that we already are dealing with the origin. Even if it's become so distorted, it still came from the Veda. Because Veda is knowledge. Veda is describing the knowledge of this world. Who's given this world is Krishna. So the knowledge of that, that's what the Veda is describing. So if anyone goes and observes directly, it's the same. Just like, let's say, I have a manual, right? And I have a machine. Now, all the things in the machine are described in the manual. Let us say you get that teenager. He picks up the thing and just starts playing with it. And he figures out so many things. Out of 100 things it can do, he figures out, you know, 15. And so he thinks he's doing pretty good. There's another 85 things it can do. And now he figures it out. Now he knows all this knowledge no one else knows. It's right there in the manual. So that's the thing, is whatever they're figuring out, it's in the Veda. But they don't know it's in the Veda because they're using the inductive method. Right? So that's the thing. And then there's a false ego. I did this rather than I took part in this. Right? So that's the thing. The inductive gives much more rise to the satisfaction of false ego. While the deductive, it doesn't have the false ego as well.
Yes. Maharaj, can we say that this is what Srila Prabhupada meant when he said that we should be innovative and ingenious in preaching?
Yes, yes.
That we can relate to anybody?
Yes. The whole point of it being ingenious or ingenuity is that you're going to see the person and try to, you know, by interacting, understand where they're coming from. So you're kind of going to give all the vocabulary, the attitude, the examples, you know, how you kind of move through it and all that based on the person. As we discussed yesterday, that's preaching. You don't consider the person, and it's just a concept, you know, that is just ethereal. That's your soft preaching. And where it's the external form of the practices and that, and that without considering the individual, it's just how, what worked for you. That's hard preaching. So both of them aren't fully preaching because they're not considering the individuals. So they say the hard preaching, so many people don't join. But the soft preaching, did they actually ever join? All those people at the yoga studio, are they devotees? Do they identify with them? Do they have Shraddha? Because at least by the hard, maybe out of 100 people, only 5 took it. But those 5 have Shraddha. You know? And if you had used actual preaching, you might have gotten a few more. But you can't say, because like in Sweden, probably gave that lecture, there were 300 students in the lecture, only 1 became a devotee. So the whole point is you can't, we're just making the point is that when you present the actual Vedanta philosophy, that's what then changes the consciousness of the soul. Not the apara vidya, not yoga or vastu or Ayurveda. You know, it means these are nice mediums to use, but why can't you describe the philosophy even through the verses? You're dealing with vastu and Ayurveda. They work because of philosophy. Religion is applied philosophy. So therefore, if you're presenting the religion, why can't you see it in connection with the philosophy? If you can't, it means do you actually know yoga? Do you actually know Ayurveda? Does that make sense? That's the point. So, we don't mind that people use varieties of things, but they have to be very, very careful about then saying that this is, you know, in other words, you have to be very qualified to say, you know, that what they're doing is the way, the light, and the, what's the other one? I am the way, I am the light, I am the truth. Yes. Does that make sense? No. Yes, so that's the difficulty, is that they have to be very, very careful. So there's, even though what they're doing may be okay, the attitude that goes there is the problem. The faith that is connected is the problem. They think the only reason you can deal is because I'm dealing in this field, I'm dealing in yoga, therefore people will accept it. That means, why wouldn't they accept Krishna consciousness? They're the soul, not the body. The yoga is for the gross and subtle body. Philosophy is for the soul. And being Krishna conscious is about the soul. It's not that the body becomes Krishna conscious. It's the same dead matter, whether you're the soul's Krishna conscious or not. Does that make sense? Yes.
I have a question about soft preaching and compassion.
Some soft preaching and compassion.
We see that when he said religion became mundane in a time when some people try to make it social adaptive.
Yes.
But sometimes it happened in spite of desires of leaders. Now in Iskcon I see the same trend. For example, 20 years ago, the position of Mataji in Iskcon was very hard. I mean, there wasn't a lower position than men. Then you have given some explanation about Vedic approach to this system.
Yes.
But some preachers of middle position in Iskcon, they tried to give some seminars, psychological seminars about happy family life, how to respect women, and other points about
yes.
it. Then some women from society, they started to listen only these seminars about family life, not about Krishna consciousness.
Right.
And they misunderstood that. They started to think that Krishna consciousness means happy family life, equal
right.
to happy
yes, yes.
Family life. That it's equal to protection of women only.
Yes, yes.
That women is like a god of in family.
Yes.
And they
That's
brought
perfection,
their husbands.
Right?
They brought their husbands to ISKCON, but when husbands started to listen that. Main goal of family of human life to serve to God, not to family, but to God firstly. And they became more
more Krishna conscious.
More Krishna conscious. Then these women started to blame Krishna consciousness if it's a wrong.
They're ruining my family.
It's a cheating of women. And
yes. So
the how to find this balance?
The point is you have to go to the origin of how things work. So what you're dealing here is that it's one or the other. In other words, then the tendency is the men take the philosophy, not the religion. The women take the religion, not the philosophy. But the point is you have to use both. And it's that combination that works. In other words, the man will emphasize philosophy, but that's tempered by the woman's understanding of religion. And the woman's practice of religion is going to be tempered by the man's understanding of philosophy. That's her problem. You see, he's always talking about husband and wife. He says religious wife, spiritual husband. Right? Because that's the area where they emphasize. Not that they don't know both. It's just where the emphasis is. Right? So the difficulty comes down is that there's no such thing as lower position. It's a matter of what is the mood, the mentality, the obligations, these kind of things that are there. And so then you have to take all of that. And so what's happened in the past is people are just coming up with their own idea. In other words, the guy doesn't think very highly of women anyway. And then he joins Krishna consciousness, so he just applies the Krishna consciousness philosophy into his own concept of religion, which is already faulty. Does that make sense? Yeah. So you're going to see is that it's in the cultures that where they deal in that way naturally as karmis, that they're the ones that are dealing in that way, same way as devotees. Because you have that, let's say, Indian families. Like that, they're going to deal with their women completely different. It's the same philosophy. Like in North India, it's just like we'll refer to women as Mataji, right? But let's say in North India, then you can use Mataji, it's fine, but they'll generally, as the colloquial term, use Maya. Like that. Because it's no, women are Maya. They represent the material energy. They from them, all the senses, everything's engaged, the whole house, everything. So it's all going centered around them. And so they've known, but they still deal properly. Because it's a relationship. It's a thing. So you have to know how to do. You know, it's just like this. Let's say I have a bowl and a spoon. Okay? And inside the bowl, there's some liquid. Okay? So now, if you want to, you know, I say, transfer, if you want to get the benefit of that liquid inside your body, right, then you're going to use the spoon and pick up the liquid and put it in your mouth, right? So now, which is superior, the spoon or the bowl? One of them has to be superior. One of them has to be absolutely inferior, and one of them is, you know, has all the respect, and the other one we give zero respect. That's the first world culture. Second, third, fourth, that's actually the difference between them. They don't see like that. And anyone from the first world, they put down these other ones because they see like that. You think there's any Hispanic? They're so macho. But it's only a show your Latino cultures. Women are so much more heavier than the men. You know, the guy can be son can be the big, running a gang, a cartel and this and that. And his mother is upset with him. She comes over, slaps him in the face. And he's, oh, mama, this and that. anyone else did that, they would be dead. And then we'll say as it's a lower culture. Why? Because they consider people. That's why it doesn't move as fast. The first world is ready to cut ties with anything and anybody as long as they get their profit. That's why they're superior. You know what I'm saying? And it's not that first world needs that, because you see those coming from these third and fifth world backgrounds, they come up into the first world and they can do exactly what those from the first world can do and maintain their culture if they want. So you're dealing with a culture that's not so developed as they would like to be. Any development comes from religion. Their background comes from religion. That's why they're cultured. That's why they're this and that. So it has to be understood. It all goes back to the Veda. So then the problem comes up here is that men have to be superior. Women have to be inferior. It's like, why it has to work like that? It's a bowl and a spoon. One's holding everything and one's delivering it. You know, if you don't have the bowl, how's the spoon going to work? And if you don't have the spoon, then how's the bowl going to work? You know what I'm saying? So that's that they go together. So why is it has to be one has to be superior, one has to be inferior? You know? So that's the problem. It's just not understood what they're dealing with. And so, therefore, then men were self-centered and not in the 50s. Right? Totally. Came back from the war, this, that, and it's just about themselves and all that. So they deal with women not so nicely. And so, then, did the women not follow the men? The men were self-centered. Now, did the women not become self-centered? So, that's what the Veda says. The woman will follow the men. So, now women are doing exactly what the men do. They're self-centered. It's all about the women are doing that. Men don't care about the women. Women don't care about the men. It's just how nature works. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing. So they're not understanding the actual culture. So you have to get down to the root of the culture, why it's like that, what it does, what are the duties and obligations. Then your rights naturally come up. Does that make sense? So it's a problem. Krishna consciousness in the main. Yes?
Srila Prabhupada gives that example that women are like fire, mm-hmm. and men like butter.
Yes.
So, if we look closely to that example, the fire in contact with butter remains fire.
Yes.
But the butter, you know, gets, you know, melts down, burns, yes. and it, you know, all kind of funny transformations.
Hence, femme fatale. Butter's gone. The yes. women remain.
It actually burns.
Yeah, so that's the whole point, is that there's one purport in the first canto. He never mentions that anywhere else in any of the purports on the book where he says women are more powerful than men. Because he can't bring that up too often, or the men will freak out. And he can't bring it up too often, or the women, you know, you don't want the head to expand, you know. Can't get through doors, you know, and the head's too big. You can't get through doors. You have to bend down every time because the head's bigger. You always hit it on the top. You know, it's a problem. You know, getting hats to fit, you know, it's like that. Then you end up like the Red Queen or something like that, you know, trying to get a hat. So it's a problem, you know. So, but that's the fact. It's the energy. Is because in relation, who's stronger, Krishna or his energies? But when Krishna is stronger, has he manifest his energies?
No.
So, therefore, a man on his own is stronger than the woman on her own. But when it's a relationship between the man and the woman, the woman is stronger. But she's stronger, therefore, will she respect him if he's not strong? No, he has to be his best strength. And so, therefore, being at his best strength, but that strength has to be applied in the context of her position, her strength. Does that make sense? Now it's a proper combination. He's strong, she's strong, but he's in consideration of her strength. Because he considers her strength, she'll consider his. He doesn't consider hers, she won't consider his. So it's a direct science, but it's not understood. Who wants to hear it? The men don't want to hear it. You know, the liberated women don't want to hear it. You know, the non-liberated women are cool with it, but where are the men that are going to do it? You know, so it's a cultural problem, not philosophical, you know. Not religious. It's a, you know, it's a vikarmic problem. Because anybody who has families that work and that, they know what they can do as a woman, what they can do as a man, what you do. They know. They'll tell you. And it'll be the same thing. They may focus on a different area, but if you go around the world to every culture in the world, every family from high class to low, that are working, and ask them what makes it work and all that, you'll see that they're all talking the same thing. That's Veda. So that's the whole point. Why go through the ascending process to get the Veda when we can start with Veda and then try to apply it? You know, because it's like this. If they're saying, okay, woman follows the man, right? That's what the Shastra says. Okay, so is your wife doing what you expect her to do? Is she following your mood and like that? Is she doing what you think? No, not at all. She's supposed to follow the man. So that's the thing is you have this in-your-face attitude, and if you ask him, she's doing the same thing. Anytime I spoke to a couple with they're having problems, like that, you speak to the man, because somehow or another he has to speak first. And he'll see all these things about how the wife this, that, this, that, this, that. Then you speak to the wife about the same thing. And then you figure out is all those problems are coming from the man. Like that. What man wants to hear that? It's always like, okay, I'm making this sacrifice. What's she making? What's she doing? No, it's that you make the sacrifice, then she'll make the sacrifice. You're taking it. I'll only do what she does. But that means that she's first. And if she's first, that means you're dependent upon her. How are you masculine? Masculine means you do it first. You're humble first, then she'll be humble. You're considerate first, then she'll be considerate. That's independent. That's masculine. Who wants to hear that? That's the problem. But that's the actuality. And it's universal. It works anywhere, in anything. You know? Guaranteed. The Rakshasas and their marriage, then they have to listen to the wife. Right? You know, she wants to cook the leg today and you are thinking more about the head. Like that, you're going to eat leg today, not head. It's just the way it goes. You know? You want to show your eight fangs that you have? She also has eight fangs. So it's just, you know, it's just, that's just the way it goes. Even Krishna, you see in his related, then every wife thought he was the perfect henpecked husband. So that's the whole thing. It's just, that's how it works. Because Krishna, he is the all-powerful. But that power is in consideration of the energy. Because the energy is dependent. So can you deal with it as you like? No, you have to deal with it as the... If the energy is dependent upon the energetic, therefore you have to deal with the energy according to its nature. That's its dependence on the energetic. You can't deal otherwise. You can't expect it to be independent itself. So that's why it goes that way. It's always, why the men have to? Because that's the way it works. Krishna's Atmarama. Then he goes into a relationship with his energies. It's a consideration of the energies, the nature of the energy. And each energy is unique in itself. He's one. They're many. Right? So each of the 16,108 queens, he deals with each one of them uniquely according to their nature. And it says so in the Bhagavatam. It specifically says that point. So, So that's how it works. This is not explained. So that's why then these things don't work. Now if you explain it, the women will be happy, the men get grumpy.
You lose all your friends.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's the way it goes. So it's like, you know, how you say? So you have to consider that. You know, I said, no man is an island, but they really think they are. So you know, you have to go with the, you know, you have to roll with it. So, you know, you just don't tell these things. If someone asks, then you may they carefully tell. But if they don't ask, don't tell. Isn't that the rule? Don't ask, don't tell. No. Okay. So then, okay. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaur Premanandi.